When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast.
Hello all. Welcome to another episode of Armchair Cricket Podcast, a podcast focusing on test cricket by armchair critics of the game. I'm your host, Ajit. In today's episode, we are joined by a much sought-after co-host, a frequent collaborator from Bangalore. Hello, Ramchandra. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Ajit. Nice to be here again.
Well, as always, it's a pleasure for me to host you. And I always enjoy our chats because I think in the recent past, the tribute you gave to Bedi was one of the most listened episodes of mine. But also, I think it was also one of the most heart-touching episodes. I got a lot of positive comments. So, well done on that front. And also, I think it went well with your article.
Yeah. Thanks for that. And one of the best surprises which I received was from Mr. Vijay Lokapalli, who is like a veteran journalist who covered Indian cricket for 3 decades almost. Like, he traveled with the Indian team throughout the 80s, 90s, and better part of 2000s. He read my article and he DM'd me saying that it's a fantastic tribute. So that was like someone who knew Mr. Bedi personally, close friend of Mr. Bedi was Vijay Lokapalli, who resides in Delhi apparently. So he was a family friend to Mr. Bedi. So someone like him, like, you know, saying that the piece was very good and it covered pretty much the whole, you know, personality of Mr. Bedi was really heart-touching. I was really flattered, and it was really overwhelming feeling for me, Ajit. Thanks for this. Yeah.
I had no part in it. Well done.
No. You actually pushed me. Actually, I was becoming a bit lazy. Like, you actually pushed me that day. Like, once your article is ready, please, you know, forward it to me so that I can, like, link it to this podcast. So that actually prompted me to, you know, hurry up and do that in the weekend. So I had to just invest a couple of hours, but it came out well, actually.
Good to hear. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, that was a well-researched article. And even I read it, it was very well written. So well done. And hope you continue writing such articles.
Yeah, sure, Ajit. Yeah.
So now I think there are three almost inconsequential games that we have to have a quick chat on, and then we can maybe discuss about the semifinals of the World Cup. So first of all, did you catch all three of these inconsequential games, basically starting from Bangladesh-Australia?
Yeah, I did. I did watch Mitchell Marsh blitzkrieg with the bat, and also the Pakistan game. The moment Butler won the toss, it was all over. Game was done. I was actually interested to see if Pakistan bats first, and if they you know, make a statement like, go and get somewhere around 400, 450. And cricket is a funny game, Ajit. You never know if England were like 20 for 3 or something, you never know what could have happened. And I was just waiting to see Pakistan's approach towards batting, if they you know, get to bat first. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And of course, the final game, India-Netherlands game, was a dead rubber. And India got a nice batting practice before the semifinals.
We'll take it one by one. So the moment New Zealand clinched that, almost overwhelming net run rate, it was clear whether Pakistan wins or not, they may not have any option to actually go qualify for the semifinals. So we'll start with the first one, which is Bangladesh-Australia. So in this case, I think Bangladesh batted well. They acquitted themselves well. No 100, but 306 in 50 overs against an Australian bowling attack. That's well done, right? Tauhid Hruday promoted to 4. I think he showed what he can do in the future.
Yes. Top-class batting effort. Irrespective of the conditions, getting somewhere around over 300 against that quality Australian attack is is a fantastic effort. And Litton Das and the other guys, the top order, they probably had they been consistent, Ajit, going throughout from the first game. Probably Bangladesh could have won a couple of more games. And who knows, probably with their spin attack, they probably could have been one of the contenders for the top four also. I actually thought that they had the side to be the top four, especially considering that they were playing the subcontinent. Unfortunately, Litton Das disappointed. Tamim Iqbal didn't turn up. So this was a problem. And it was nice to see, as you mentioned, Rudai, getting some runs. And 306, I probably felt that with the bowling attack, though Shakib Al Hasan was not there, I felt that they had enough, dices in their repertoire to actually trouble Australia. But the way Mitchell Marsh batted, he was unbelievable. This innings was reminiscent of Shane Watson's 180 odd. I think he scored into 2011 right after the World Cup, if I'm not wrong. So it was pretty much similar kind of an innings. So, I remember that innings when Mitchell Marsh was going on, and I actually watched the highlights later. I could not catch the live action completely, but that was crazy hitting. Everyone has to watch it. He's one of the cleanest striker of the cricket board. Right. One of the cleanest strikers, yeah.
9 sixes, 17 fours. David Warner must be given some credit as well. He sort of steadied the ship. By the time Warner was out at 132, you almost thought that the result was beyond any doubt, even though there were so many runs to get. They had put Australia in such a comfortable position already by the 22nd over, and some of Bangladesh attack was beginning to look increasingly toothless. Maybe let's go home syndrome where...
Let's go, it's true.
Right?
They have resigned to that. They had resigned to their fate. That's it. Very simple.
No, but Australia, I think, are nicely clicking into top gear. So, very big scores, right? So, previous game, Maxwell doing what Maxwell only can. In this game, he was rested, luckily.
In this case,
also Adam Zampa took two more wickets. Again, wonderful spell. So anybody who takes 2 for 32 in 10 overs against Asian teams, he's bowling really well, a spinner, right?
Yeah. And so Adam Zampa, for a spinner to be topping the wicket number of, highest number of wicket takers chart, keeping someone, Kuldeep Yadav and Jadeja, who've been bowling, hardly been bowling bad balls, speaks volumes about Adam Zampa's effort. It's unbelievable, He's one bowler who has been really consistent. Though the faster bowlers have gone for lots of runs, they've been really erratic. Given the big names, they've really been erratic. Hazelwood has been okay to a certain extent, but Mitchell Starc and Cummins have gone for runs. But Zampa has been one standout performer with the ball for them.
Now, that was the point, right? In India, I think five bowlers have been sharing the wickets around. But when it comes to Australia, I think Zampa and to an extent Hazelwood, you already pointed out correctly, are the people who've sort of run away with it when it comes to wickets and consistency. So, but if you're an Australian team, you would be happy, right? Because they're clicking. Things are falling in place perfectly.
Everything is falling in place. And then they are the team which, they know to win big games. There's not somebody who's going to, probably they've lost only one semi-final, if I'm not wrong, in the whole World Cup history. That's the one which they lost in 2019 against England. I don't think they lost any semi-finals. It just says what kind of a side they are historically. So you've got to be wary of them.
Right. See, Australia is always you never write them off heading into any knockouts. Yeah. So here they are. Yes. Things are falling in place mostly. So if you were to, maybe also take some time to do a quick preview of the second semi-final. So the second semi-final will be South Africa-Australia. Really a mouth-watering contest. First time after 1999 when they played out that.
Yes. I think 2007 they played out. But it was a one-off. It was a one-sided affair with McGrath and Sean Tate. They bowled them out for 140, if I'm not wrong, and chased it down in 25-30 hours. Yeah, I remember in 2007. Yeah.
That one doesn't even register in our minds, I suppose. So one-sided for a knockout game.
Yeah.
But other one where the way with four balls left, how it was clearly their game and how that run out with somebody dropping the bat.
So rekindles my childhood memory. And I still remember we did not have cable connection at home. It was live on, since it was semi-final, though India had crashed out. The semi-finals were, both the semi-finals were aired in Doordarshan. So I remember having my dinner and watching that game. I knew that Lance Stevenson is going to do something crazy. I remember watching it with my dad, and the moment the first four was hit, my dad said, this guy is going to finish it off. And I felt that one wicket, anything can happen. And Damien Fairbairn is not a pedestrian bowler. He's a good enough bowler. He's no Glenn McGrath, but he's a decent bowler. Then the second ball again makes some room and gets another boundary. And I felt that how can this guy do this? And we had someone like Robin Singh at 6 and 7, and who should bat well, but this guy was something else in that World Cup. And then they probably should have been run out on the third ball also. They somehow escaped unscathed. Mm-hmm. And the fourth ball, they did the same thing. And one guy ran and the other guy didn't run, and it was all over. And how can they do that? I mean, I still remember the next day in the school, we chatted for the whole day till the evening, all our friends, group of friends, chatting about how can this happen. I mean, just imagine school kids in India were heartbroken seeing that loss. Imagine the plight of the South African players and the common public then. And that semi-final and the one in the 2015 where they unfortunately lost in New Zealand. Probably they should have won that game.
Correct.
In Wellington, if I'm not wrong.
Dale Steyn, right?
They've had the hat tricks. Yeah, Dale Steyn. Bowling to Elliot. Elliot won that game. Yeah, yes, Grant Elliot. So, I mean, like, they've had that history of heartbreaks, Ajit. I just hope that they make it to the finals once at least, and let's see what happens. But talking about that game, Ajit, technically speaking, their best chance is to win the toss and bat first. I don't see this team, how they can chase something somewhere around 270, 280. If Australia bat first and put up 270, 280, South Africa and big mid struggle, especially if Quinton de Kock falls early. So Bawuma is not in the best of the forms. So their middle order is a bit shaky while chasing. While batting first, they have been doing fantastically well. But you could see that, you know, they even struggled against Netherlands. With due respect to Netherlands, probably 240, 250, they should have chased it down. I mean, the kind of quality of batters they have. So they have this, you know, one thing which is against them. But if they bat first, they have a really good chance with the bowling attack they have. And if they put up somewhere around 270, 280 at Kolkata, they have a great chance. But yeah, I'd love to prove wrong, to be proven wrong. Even, you know, South Africa chasing down 270, 280, it'd be great spectacle for cricket lovers. But that is really difficult, happy. I hope that South Africa wins. I'm backing South Africa to win that game. Australia is technically the clear favorites. I think 70-30 in my favor. Australia should win that game.
Fair enough. So I concede that, you know, Australia are clearer favorites because they are the form team. South Africa have outdone themselves getting this far, must be said. At least from the team perspective, they are talking of no pressure on this group of players who've overachieved already.
Yeah.
But can they go the additional couple of steps? So that's the real question here. And they have many things falling in place themselves. It must be said that, you know, their bowling attack is clicking well. Their spinners are doing really well, by the way.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a more of a turgid track. It's not going to be a high-scoring game. So one might say, you know, 260, 270 might already be a very good score even if a team bats first. In that case, you hit the nail on the head when you said South Africa are better off batting first, but Australia can either bat first or chase. So they have done both equally well. So from that perspective itself and how well the teams have shaped up, Australia are the clear favorites. But for me, well, somehow I sense an upset coming. I somehow sense Australia will be beaten and South Africa will make it to the final. Let's see if that were to come true, because they also have another wrist spinning option, right? In Tabrez Shamsi, whom they've used more sparingly. They may throw both of them. Maharaj will definitely start. Maharaj is the one that's been making all the difference in the second 10 overs or the second and third 10 overs. So if they combine both and there is something else that happens, they are perfectly capable of stunning and, you know, bundling Australia out for maybe even under 200. That gives them a chance. For me, that's the only real chance they will have, their spin bowling attack, because as well as Jansen has bowled, I'm thinking he will be targeted by the Australians. I expect it'll be Rabada, Jansen, Kutse, Maharaj to start with the bowling. And the fifth bowler, that's where, depending on the pitch, I will expect either it'll be Ngidi or Shamsi. So I expect Shamsi may be thrown into the mix, because he'll be given the license to take the wickets even at the cost of, you know, buying them, right? A little bit costlier.
Yeah. Sure.
So this is going to be very, very interesting, whether Australia bat first or bowl first. The second spinner might make a huge difference, because Markram is there. But people like Warner, people like Marsh and Smith will definitely target Warner. So will definitely target Markram. So let's see how it goes. So that's something that's one point I'm really thinking. But I have a feeling somehow it's also resting with this leader. Bouma is a different sort of a leader compared to previous captains of South Africa who found themselves in a knockout. I think that might be the difference.
You never know. We can be up to Bouma special. You never know. That guy is highly unpredictable.
Nah, he only activates when the team is in trouble. You don't want that. Yeah, I mean, his exactly. scores are only exactly. when the team is like absolutely like drowning.
And we are missing one thing. Look at his ODI numbers. They are fantastic. Just like KL Rahul, how he's been looking. Yeah, despite this lean patch what he has had, he averages in mid-40s and his strike rate is close to 95, 96. So that's a fantastic record to have when you have played over 50 ODIs. So I think he's commands that respect in the team, I believe.
No, yeah, for sure. I mean, he has the game to actually attack the faster bowlers at the start, right? So that might actually work in South Africa's favor as well. Let's see, because it'll be Hazelwood basically. And if Stark turns up well, if Hazelwood and Stark turn up, most teams will not be able to withstand that. But let's see if that happens. Yeah. So moving on, the next inconsequential game, must be said, was between England and Pakistan. So Pakistan were playing for some pride here. But you made a very interesting observation off air before the game itself, or with the toss, the game may have been decided.
Correct. The toss, the moment Butler chose to bat first, it was all over for Pakistan, isn't it?
Not exactly. So I was thinking this Pakistan bowling lineup may dig deep. The spinners have hardly done anything in the whole tournament.
Yes.
Maybe they'll come to the party, maybe try and, influence the setting a little bit. Okay, it was in Eden Gardens again, sort of a little bit of a turgid pitch, if possible. If they can, keep England to 230, 240, maybe there's a game at hand. But, England batted really well. First of all, Johnny Bairstow turned up. Malan, more or less consistent self. Luckily, for those of us who are missing Joe Root, he came back. He hit a 60. Ben Stokes continued his good form. And Butler, Brooke, they sort of finished strong. Right? Willie in the end.
Yeah.
And 337 was comfortably 50 runs above par, if you ask me, there.
Yeah, on that pitch, yes, true.
Right? Well, Haris Rauf and Shaheen Shafridi took the wickets, same for Wasim, but they were all targeted towards the end. Harry Brooke hit out, right? And then Butler did a little bit. And then, of course, Willie, who was probably signing off from international cricket, also hit out, right? I don't know if they're going to try and persuade Willie to stay back, because he's really been playing well as far as England was concerned.
Yeah, proper white ball bowler, he's got all the stocks, to succeed in white ball cricket. And it's unfortunate, people retiring in early 30s. It's really unfortunate.
I mean, he was not given a contract. I mean, first of all, it was weird they announced the contracts during the World Cup, but I'll park that.
Yes.
He was not given a contract extension. And look, he's also at an age where he has made a name for himself in the T20 circuit. There is the 100.
More sought after.
Correct?
Yeah.
And he can open the batting IPL. If you want. He can open the bowling if you want. Somebody that flexible. Yeah. And he showed that. He took five balls, hit 15, and then came back and took three wickets, right?
Yeah.
Pakistan, probably their openers couldn't get going. Abdullah Shafiq, on and off. I expected Fakhar Zaman may sign off again with the big innings. He couldn't, right? Both of these were down to Willie, right at the top of the order, right?
No.
So, and then Wokes was economical, but Willie took the wickets up front. And towards the end, he conceded some runs, but the result was beyond any doubt, right?
Yeah.
And
so,
Babar Azam, again, another middling score, Mohammad Rizwan, middling score. Saud Shakil and Agha Salman sort of making a point that they belong in this 11, nothing more. And Agha Salman made a good 50.
Yes.
Right? And then a little bit of swinging from the tail. But the moment I would say Fakhar Zaman failed, and then at about 3 for 61, the game
Babar
was
got
over
out.
When Babar was out. Right? Yes, 400 was definitely over.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, at least England will take some solace that they will not have to worry about any Champions Trophy shenanigans.
Champions Trophy. Right? Exactly. Yeah. But I think if you look at England's batting, Ajit, it took a lot of time to, come together. So that was the problem. Joe Root, after the two high 50s what he got in earlier games, then he slipped into a bit of slump. Stokes did not play for three or four games initially. So he took a while to get going, and the top order didn't fire. So they had all these problems. To compound to that problems, the bowling was not not even half a decent what we expect at this level. They were like pretty erratic, and they were very expensive, and the way they batted against Sri Lanka,
correct,
the game which probably they should have won big and resurrected their campaign, the way they lost that one, that just summed up their whole World Cup campaign. So they were not there. It's unfortunate. Defending champions going out in this fashion is really unfortunate. But they probably had all the bases covered coming to this World Cup. Yeah, bowling was a bit shaky, but they had the batting to cover up. They should have made to top four. There is no two ways about it. They were one of my favorites to make it to the top four. Unfortunately, they didn't. So yeah, a disappointing campaign. After I read somewhere that it is probably the worst defending champions campaign after the 1919 World Cup, where Sri Lanka bowed out before getting into the Super Six. So this is something pretty much on par with that performance. Yeah, it's really unfortunate. But Sri Lanka in 1919, no one gave a chance considering the conditions in England in 1919. And Sri Lanka were a pretty decent side, but you didn't really expect that Sri Lankan side to do well in English conditions. So, but this England side had all the aces to perform here, but unfortunately they couldn't. And then when you talk about Pakistan's campaign, I mean, like, this bowling attack was started to be the best, if I'm not wrong, before the Asia Cup. They had Nasim Shah, Haris Rauf, and Shahin Afridi for bowling and firing in all cylinders. Then probably they covered the weakness of the spinners to a certain extent, because all these three seamers were on top of the game. And then Nasim Shah got injured, unfortunate injury, and Shahin Shah Afridi has been bowling well in patches, but the biggest disappointment for me, Ajit, is Haris Rauf. I mean, like, he's really been very, very expensive, and he got a lot of wickets, but he spent a lot of runs to get those wickets. And if one of your top bowlers has spent more than 500 runs in 9 games, it's really, really unfortunate. Like you're asking for trouble, as simple as that. So that just shows that, because the batsmen also did not bat the way they're supposed to bat in 2023 as per the ODI standards. So that also compounded their problems. And yeah, you could see the fielding was also not up to the mark, and they were expecting some other results to go in the way. I remember the last one when we did a podcast, when I asked about Pakistan's chances, I said, you can expect one or two games to go in your favor, but you can't expect 4 or 5 games to go in your favor to help you out. And even if that had not gone, if they had chased on this 337 and made a statement, that would have said that this is a, probably a quality side, but they bowed out. I mean, there was not even a kind of a, they did not even compete against England in this game. 337, they lost out pretty badly. So they just summed up that campaign, and they probably never there. Who knows? I mean, Nazim Shah's injury could have been a biggest factor in their, derailment of the campaign. But at this level, you can't really blame. Look at how India has coped up with Hardik Pandya's loss. They shummy in, they're batting, they're proper 6 batters, they have a longest tail now, but still the top order is covering, isn't it? I mean, that you at this level, it's not a school side where you struggle because one main player has missed out. It's not like that. So you got to have backup for that. And unfortunately, as you know, I mean, Pakistan doesn't have the depth in the, in the bench strength. And that was pretty much apparent the way they played their cricket. And probably there's going to be a lot of changes in the days to come. Hopefully, if Pakistan can resurrect their side and come back strong for all the multinational tournaments, it's going to be a great contest between India and Pakistan. Let's hope that all this hype, lives up to the expectation in the days to come.
Look, at least in the first half, they sort of set up an expectation, Pakistan, that they could go all the way as well. But they couldn't follow through. Somehow, the campaign never got going. This is the first thing. But for me, Babar as a captain also left a little bit to be desired. We see some coaching staff changes. Yeah. I think Morne Markle has resigned as the coach of Pakistan, fast bowling coach. He's resigned from that post, right? And Alan Donald has left his position as Bangladesh fast bowling coach. Probably under different circumstances, the two of them, right? But that's coming through. But as you say, we may notice other changes as well. You're right.
Mickey Arthur,
Mickey Arthur, I think, has the backing of the board, if you ask me. And Grant Bradburn also, I think, might be safe. But however, captaincy, we may see some changes in the captaincy, because Babar also didn't acquit himself very well in the home test series. So, some things that
he's lost.
I dare say it's a good thing for him.
Yeah.
He's had his turn at the top. I would say he's still their best batsman without any doubt. And he should be allowed to do that, focus on being their best batsman and just continue piling on the runs, winning them games with the bat, right? So that's okay. It's not a bad idea. So that's one thing. And at least I think Haris Rauf, he'll have to figure a way out where in T20s, it's okay if you are that costly, where you can get away with it. But in a one-day setup, right, it's basically he has a lot of pace. It's very obvious. But then high quality batsmen, they'll really make you pay if you stray. For example, probably people like Hazelwood, he's not tall. He's not as fast as Rauf, but he's definitely taller. Right. So you can see what control means and how you can effectively use it. So this is all something that they'll have to go back to the drawing board. Also, a spinner with the teeth. I was looking for, I forget his name, Abrar, I think. The one with the glasses. I think he was traveling spare.
Yes, Abrar.
I don't know if he would have made more sense. Usama Mir played a couple of games. I expected a little bit more from their spin bowling attack, really. That is the only one I was a bit disappointed. Nawaz was in and out of the squad. Maybe he didn't get the consistency he was required to show, but it left me a bit wanting their spin bowling attack. So that's all I would say. But well, they were again very short, just short of making a semi-final, I must say, not very short. So it's okay. They will go back home a little bit disappointed, but not particularly unhappy about how they performed. It's just a couple of things. Yeah. If it went their way, maybe they would have been there in the semi-final. Now to the third and the most meaningless of the all dead rubbers wearing Netherlands took on India. Well, I was really disappointed with the Indian team selection for the game. Thoughts on that?
Yeah. Look, there are two ways of looking at it, Ajit. There was one school of thought which said that why do you want to break that winning rhythm? You're winning. I mean, of course, even a second string side can take on Netherlands and compete and probably even defeat them. But I remember Rahul Dravid saying that, there's no reason for any changes and we'll be going with the same side. It was kind of a David Valera versus Goliath kind of a battle. And I too was expecting Prasidh and Shardul Thakur to get a look in and then probably
Ashwin?
Rest Shami and Bumrah.
No, I would have rested Ashwin Siraj too, and Ashwin Bumrah. Shami is on red hot streak. Why stop it? Let it go. But
anyhow, he has missed out 4 games in the beginning.
And I would say give Shardul and Krishna a go with Shami and play Ashwin in the place of maybe Jadeja. I know Jadeja took a 5-4 in the last game. You don't want to break that. But look, it's a choice.
Yeah. And I mean, actually, probably they would have felt that what sense would it even make? Because the playing 11 is almost pretty much fixed for the semifinals. You know that these guys won't be playing there. So probably felt that it's a kind of a continuity, and you could see that they did not want to risk them, and you could see Shubman Gill bowling, Surya Kumar.
Yeah, what is going on with
Rohit
that?
And Kohli? I felt that for a moment. I thought, is there any exhibition match going on, or why they are treating their opponents so? So I mean, it is not good on cricket's part, to be very honest.
In my book, I call that distance. He was injured.
Siraj was injured, but I mean, you don't have someone like Surya Kumar who doesn't even bowl in first-class cricket. Gill doesn't bowl in first-class cricket.
Oh, no, they do.
It was kind of a fun going
little
on.
Little bit they do.
No. They probably wouldn't just roll their arms in and that's it. They technically don't bowl in first-class cricket. So, I was pretty much, to be honest, as a cricket fan, I was upset with the way the things were going on. When you look at even Kohli and Rohit Sharma also, it's been decades they have bowled consistently. So even their all their arm over, it's fine.
They both took a wicket, right?
But still,
Rohit,
I think,
and Kohli.
Yeah, they both took a wicket. But this was on the cards. I mean, the moment Rohit won the toss and elected to bat first, I knew that 400 was a must at the Chinnaswamy, and considering the conditions and square boundaries, and Rohit would love to hit those pull shots. And I mean, if it just went as per plan, I was expecting a big 100 from Rohit or even Kohli for that matter. That didn't happen. And then Shreyas Iyer on the local bar, Rahul made merry. Mm. And Rahul's innings in particular, the control he gave. And it's not easy coming at 5 in the 35th over and getting a century of 62 balls, and which happens to be the quickest ever century by an Indian in the World Cup.
Wow.
So that's some record. I know. I mean, it is one of the greatest of the attacks, but still, a World Cup 100 of 62 balls is some innings. And yeah, I mean, the sixes he hit, the pickup shot, it's like eye-catching. I mean, when KL Rahul is on song, I mean, you just forget everything and watch him bat. He's of a different class altogether. And unfortunate that his career was derailed by injuries and other things. But probably he should have at least a 4 or 5 years of fruitful seasons in the days to come.
Absolutely, absolutely. Also, Shreyas Iyer sort of showed in the last two innings, no issues with short balls and all those things.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, now if you were to talk India's chances, is it India's World Cup and it's their World Cup to lose potentially?
Absolutely, it's their World Cup to lose. I remember probably in the start of the World Cup when we made a podcast, I said that if you can't win with this team, if you can't win the World Cup with this team, you're not going to win this. I mean, you got all your bases covered. There's not even one weak link in the side. All the 11 you have put on the park have been contributing. Look, Siraj has not been at his usual best. Even he has got 10 plus wickets. Mm-hmm. Both your spinners have got 15 wickets. Mm. Your top three seamers have been like mind-blowing. Mm. Okay. The bowling part is done. Then you talk about the batting. Gill has been getting runs. Rohit has been top class. Virat Kohli has hit this second purple patch and he's getting runs. Only he's had technically only one failure. And then Shreyas Iyer struggled a bit initially, but then he has got 400 plus runs and Rahul has hardly put a foot wrong behind the stumps or in front of the stumps. He's been providing that stability. Surya has played just two or three games and even he has been impressive in the, and where is the weak link? And if you can't win this side, then I'd be really disappointed. And yeah, as you know, it's a funny game. A half an hour of madness can cost your 2 months of hard work. But hopefully this time, there is no heartbreaks of that sort, what happened in 2019 against New Zealand, especially because the conditions are not going to be as alien as they were in 2019 in England. So even if India slumped to, say, a 50 for 3, I believe that the conditions are such that someone like Rahul and Shreyas Iyer can resurrect that campaign and get the batting back on track. I'm sure that that's going to happen. Even if someone fails in the top order, I don't believe that, I don't think that India is going to struggle because, as I said, the conditions are not are pretty easy for Indian batters and they should get. The game is going to be in Wankhede, right? Yeah, yes. Wankhede. It's one of the best batting tracks in India at the moment. And India has shown that they can be in batting first or even chasing for that matter. So I don't see any reason why India should be, doubting themselves. Just play positively and you're far better side than New Zealand given the conditions. So it should win 9 out of 10 times and hopefully it's not the 10th time it happens day after. I hope that, India doesn't take the foot off the pedal and just go and, basically trample New Zealand. And they're that much good aside and they should do that, Tajit.
Yeah, I mean, they have the ruthlessness they've shown that they're able to go and remain unbeaten throughout. That's what is now required from this stage. Let's see if they achieve that.
Yeah, exactly.
A word of appreciation also for Netherlands, who played really well throughout the tournament.
True.
They did not disgrace themselves any point in time. Only probably two games leading up to the last stretch. They, folded up for a couple of ordinary batting efforts. But, against South Africa, at least, I was not very happy. Against England, I was not very happy.
Yeah.
But look, I think overall, if you're a South Africa management, if you're Netherlands management,
Netherlands,
you would not at all be unhappy. You would say, okay, it's okay that they could have gotten one more win, maybe. That would have made it like a fantastic tournament.
Probably they had a great chance against Sri Lanka, I believe. Yeah, Sri Lanka, they should have won against Sri Lanka.
But Sri Lanka, I think, was very clinical in that match. But yeah. It sometimes doesn't work, right? They have a game plan where they're able to bat first, put you under a little bit of pressure by taking some wickets and doing really well in the field. Also, I think Teja Nidamanuru, wonderful innings. 54 and with six sixers.
Yeah.
I mean, small boundaries, but all that doesn't matter, right? It's the same boundary for both the teams. He did well. And then Sybrand Engelbrecht, who almost had gone out of cricket, right? For him to have come back in, now he finished the highest scorer for Netherlands in the tournament.
Yes.
Couple of
great effort.
Right, couple of impactful innings from the skipper, both of which Netherlands won those games, right? So all of those, probably a bit of a letdown. Max Rodout couldn't get 100 or even a big 50. Colin Ackerman, a couple of middling scores, right? I mean, Bastelida, a little bit of a failure with the bat, but it's okay, that can happen. And also, I think he needs to work a little bit towards his finishing with the ball, because teams are able to target him.
Later part,
but fine. I mean, overall, Roelof Mandavarma may have played his last international game. We don't know that. We don't have any home games, home ODIs planned, and I don't know when Netherlands will play the next ODI, frankly. So it's a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, that's disappointing, isn't it? That's really disappointing, because there is a side, a Netherlands side, which is not a test playing side. They defeated Zimbabwe, West Indies, and Ireland, technically three test playing nations, and they made it this far. And if you're not going to give them the games, how are they going to improve? That's my simple question. They have to find a way, the ICC have to find a way where sides like Zimbabwe, Bangladesh, Ireland, and other few teams, Afghanistan also, they play regularly, you know, the bilateral tours happening, at least a 5 ODIs, 3 T20s, something like that. Keep these guys busy. Give them 20 ODIs every year. Then only they're going to improve. You see how Kenya, like, fitted away. I mean, where are Kenya now? Kenya is not even in the, you know, the associate nations list, where they're at least, they're not getting playing consistent cricket. They just vanished. So we don't have Kenya kind of a scenario happening with sides like Netherlands, you know. Once you are test playing nations, you will be in the reckoning. If you don't have the test stamp, then you're struggling. And Kenya, unfortunately, despite making it to the 2003 World Cup semi-final, after that, they just vanished, as I mentioned. So hope that ICC takes this notice into, you know, in consideration, and gives at least 20 ODIs every year for Netherlands.
Look, I think it falls also on the board. I think they may have done a lot of approaches behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So it's a tough one. So can they really
make it? Yeah, so it's the question is whether it's financially viable or not. And they have to find out a plan, the sponsors and all these steps. But look, if you're not going to go that extra mile, you're not going to spread cricket across the globe. It's very simple. And, you know, Netherlands, in my book, probably punched above their weight, and they deserve to be, you know, given that impetus to grow further. Mm-hmm.
So that's the question. Can they grow? Because as well as we play in the higher leagues here, it's not the same as competing against other international teams, right? Maybe there's still time to arrange tours with Ireland, Zimbabwe. It doesn't matter. You still go, you play international tours or invite home teams home, and then try and make it happen, right?
Yeah.
So this is let's say, the summary of all the games from the World Cup, the group stage. And we've also maybe given an inclination where we would like to see the semifinals go.
Yeah.
If you were to have a quick look at the off-field news.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts when you hear Meg Lanning has retired?
Yeah, it was shocking because she's 31 now. Mm. And what a fantastic career she's had. Average of 50 plus. Yeah, an average of 50 plus in ODIs. Right. And she actually turned up for the Delhi Capitals, if I'm not wrong, in the women's IPL this year. So she's had a very good season in Delhi also. So I don't understand why people are retiring in early 30s, because you see that, you know, the shelf life of cricketers have expanded or extended at least a good 5+ years now, because you see fast bowlers playing at 36, 37 now. So I was a bit like, I didn't really understand. I mean, I didn't see this coming, to be very honest, because at 31, you actually mature as a batter, and that's the area, you know, that's a age group where 28 to 32, 33 were the best, period for us as a batsman. So as a batter, I should say. So yeah, probably she was 31 now, and probably in the that region where the runs flow from your back, and considering her quality, she probably had at least 4 or 5 years of cricket left in her. It's disappointing. And Australian, they have lot of talent in their in the domestic circuit, but still, it's going to be a huge loss for Australian cricket.
Absolutely. Look, as I said, 5 World Cups, but more importantly, she's already had a very fruitful career. She's had a 12-13 year international career. She scored her first.
She's won everything. Yeah.
When she was 18, she scored her first.
2011 was her debut.
So it's okay. Yes. I mean, I'm not particularly disappointed, but you could think maybe there is more going on behind the scenes that we don't know. right? But
that's
not an easy decision to make, especially knowing they'll wait forever infinitely if you want to come back because of, there's nobody like you. She's the one that set up this juggernaut of an Australian women's team, which will beat anybody, will probably win 90% of the games even into the next 2 years or something. It's a tough call, and I'm not sure if it was made in a light way. I think she once tried to come back and she stopped again, and she took 2 more months off, and then to not go in the World Cup, and then she called it off. So I think there may be some other things going on, which we may one day get to know. But nonetheless, congratulations on a wonderful career to Meg Lanning, and we wish her all the best going forward.
Great.
I have a feeling within the next 3-4 years, when she's done with, you know, the T20 circuit and so on, we may see her in some coaching shoes.
Absolutely.
So that's one news from off the field. The other news is sort of valedictory, where Virendra Sehwag, Diane Edelji, and Arvinda De Silva have been inducted into the ICC Hall of Fame. About time?
Yeah, it was about time. And really happy for Diane Edelji. So a woman cricketer from India getting this greatest reward one could even imagine. Full marks to ICC for recognizing her contributions, because Diana Edelji and Shanta Rangaswamy were two like pioneers of Indian women's cricket, who started in the 60s and 70s. So these two are on par with Kapil Dev and Sunil Gavaskar,
right?
The equivalence, you can see. So really happy for her. And I was actually surprised, and Sangakkara and Jayavardhane were inducted much before Arvinda De Silva. I had not really thought in that fashion. Actually forgotten Arvinda De Silva, because he was the one who first proper quality batter who had a longish career for Sri Lanka. Of course, Jayavardhane and Sangakkara have scaled much higher heights, and they got much more runs than Arvinda. But Arvinda was a master. He was there was a period in his career where he was on par with Sachin Tendulkar in the late 90s. He was that destructive batsman. So, he thoroughly deserves it. And this Virendra Sehwag, I think he should have got this probably in. The law says that any cricketer would be eligible for this induction after 5 years of their official retirement. So, Virendra Sehwag retired in 2015. That's the rule which says. Sehwag officially retired in 2015, so probably he should have been inducted in 2020 or 2021. It was 3 years too late, but much deserving. And there's one more cricketer who probably should get in there, VVS Laxman. Probably he should be inducted in the years to come. He's one of the greatest Indian batsmen,
right?
And we don't know the yardstick, Ajit, how this is decided, because Bishan Singh Bedi was the first inductee into this ICC Hall of Fame. It is started in 2009, that was its inception. So I still don't know how someone like, I tweeted also regarding this, someone like G.R. Vishwanath, Prasanna, Chandrasekhar don't get in there. I absolutely no idea about the yardsticks which are used. And Sehwag was a pioneer as far as Indian opening and the way he batted in Test cricket is concerned. But Laxman too should have got in there, and probably much before than the others. And completely happy for three new inductees, and they're thoroughly deserving, all the three, especially Diana Edelji. It's great to see women cricketers being noticed, and it's a great thing. As an Indian, as a cricket fan, two of Indian cricketers being inducted is a great, great news.
Right. And I think Diana Edelji was 10 years too late for me. She should have been there long ago. Simply in terms of what she's contributed to the growth of the game in a whole ecosystem, in a whole country.
And even also in the BCCI setup, she's there in the BCCI setup, and she's really been contributing, and thoroughly deserving.
So anyway, we wish all of these three inductees congratulations. We still want to see more contributions from them in the world of sport anyway. Those are all the news for this episode. Anything to plug? Any new articles you've been writing? Anything you've been working on, maybe related to the World Cup finals or something else?
Yeah, World Cup. I think once the World Cup is done, probably I'll be like writing a summary of the things which went well, and probably India's campaign basically. Yeah, there's a kind of a discussion, debate going on whether this is the greatest Indian ODI set ever. And technically speaking, they are. How consistent they would be, probably if they can be consistent for a few years going forward, then there's no doubt. There's never been an Indian team which has been so ruthless at any time. It's just been winning games and is not even giving the opposition a sniff. So this technically is the greatest Indian ODI side, and they have to win the World Cup. As simple as that. I know, you know, it's a funny game. Anything can happen on a given day. But great sides find ways to win games when it matters the most. The great Australian side won 2 World Cup without losing a game. If that side can do this, this side pretty much on par with that when you talk about the, you know, man-to-man kind of thing. So they should win this, Ajit. They should win the semifinals and finals convincingly and show that they are a few notches above the rest.
Correct. I mean, the way they've played, that's how we should finish. Yeah. Let's hope, as India fans, that's how it goes. Yeah. All right. But we wish all the other teams well, because frankly,
good luck.
Now I'm going to speak as a cricket fan. If it finishes that South Africa or New Zealand win the trophy, that's the one result I'll be able to live with ahead of India.
Yeah. Yeah, very true, very true. And anyone but Australia. will make us happy.
Right.
Nothing against Australia, but they've won a lot. They've won a lot, and let's say it's the others winning.
All right.
They've got 5 already in their kitty.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right. Yeah. Thank you very much once again. As always, a pleasure to talk to you, and we'll hope to have your company sometime shortly.
Sure, Ajit. We're waiting for the next chat and wishing all our listeners, you know, like happy Deepavali, and let's hope that when we do our next podcast, India would be the world champions.
Wow. Well, from your mouth to whoever is listening up there, thanks all. We wish all a good day wherever you may be listening from, and we hope to have your company in the coming episodes as well. Thank you and bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This is the Armchair Cricket Podcast. Podcast Network.